chasing shadows.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 30th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is from pick up where we left off 2 weeks ago. I know last week was Christmas, and we read the Christmas message. And so we'll pick back up on the Gospel of Mark. We're in chapter 8. So the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 22 through 30. And he, Jesus, cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes, and put his hand upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. And he looked up, and said, I see men as trees walking. After that he put his hands again upon his eyes, and made him look up, and he was restored, and saw every man clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, Neither go into the town, nor tell it to any in the town. And Jesus went out and his disciples into the towns of Caesarea Philippi, and by the way he asked his disciples, saying unto them, Whom do men say that I am? And they answered, John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, and others one of the prophets. And he saith unto them, But whom say ye that I am? And Peter answered and saith unto him, Thou art the Christ. And he charged them that they should tell no man of him. Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 22 through 30. Okay, this evening we don't have any plan to cover any subject, so we're going to go pretty quick into an open forum. So again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. Jan, do we have any questions or any announcements?
Yes, we have a goodly number of questions for you, John.
Okay.
First question is, does the NLA site touch on the Uniform Law Commission or the Uniform Code Commission or American Law Institute?
I'm not familiar with any of those terms or organizations or whatever, so no.
Okay, that was easy. Number two, I have signed up to be a grand jury administrator and have completed the courses thus far. I also agree with Brent when he said on last Monday's call that according to Deuteronomy chapter 4 and Revelation 22, we have a duty to learn to safeguard and to do the things that God and the Constitution sets forth. However, this poses a problem for jury administrators. When we begin to set things right in our courts, it appears we need to assure that those jurors who are chosen to serve have learned the truth and what is expected of them adequately. Otherwise, justice will not inevitably be served. As Brent knows and quoted John Locke, people have an innate ability to learn, but not all follow through responsibly. How will we then be able to assure that jurists are qualified? I know that as grand jury administrators, we will be instructing them. However, won't it take a significant amount of time, i.e. more than just a couple 3-hour sessions?
Okay. Well, look, with the grand jurist, you know, anybody that is for the administration for the juries, whether it be grand or trial juries, they need to take all of our courses. And we have, of course, the government by consent course, which is the most important one. So we've got a lot of noise here. Let's see. All kinds of people making noise. Let's see if we can mute them. Okay. Anyway, we have, where was I? Now, anyway, we have the courses, and all the administrators must take all the courses. We're going to have another course up there pretty soon. We're going to have a course on the militia. And Parent is going to be helping us with that particular course. We're going to be using one of his booklets in order to create that course. And we'll make that booklet available. I think it's $6 for the booklet. You know, it's one of them pocket booklets you put in your top shirt pocket. And we're going to have a course on that too. And while I'm talking about that, I might as well make mention of the point. I don't know whether we announced this before. I don't think we did. But we're going to be working with the National Militia Alliance. Militia out of that is forming out of Virginia has approached us, and we're working with them to create some pages. I'm going to create a course for them, and Brent's going to assist them in making sure we get everything together appropriately through the resolutions and also the rules and you know, regulations of the militia, how we can put it together as the unorganized militia under the auspices of the sheriff for posse comitatus according to USC 10, which is an area where it talks about the Dick Act. I forget the number on that, but anyway, it's U.S. Code 10, the Dick Act. And there's some good stuff in there about the Dick Act, but there's also some bad stuff for the, you know, for the National Reserves, which I'm not going to talk about at the moment. But there's some good stuff and information for us for the unorganized militia. So we're going to be organizing that across the nation. Everybody, you know, should join. Every able body should join. And so we're kind of hoping that everyone here at NLA will join once we get the information up. You can see some tabs up there already if people want to start poking around to look a little bit, but we don't have anything interactive yet at that page, nor do we have the course up. I think we can get the course up pretty quickly. As a matter of fact, the other course, and I don't want to lose sight of the question either at the same time, but all these things are kind of working together, so I'm going to make use of this moment to kind of pull it all together. We pretty much have the other course done. Government by consent, you know, we had been paused at, what was it, chapter 6. We have chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, so on, all already done. Been having some technical problems, so I haven't been able to upload it. So as soon as I get a hold of our tech guy who can help me to get back into this area where I need to upload this course, I'll get it uploaded. So I am anticipating to get it uploaded this week. I had really anticipated to get it up by Monday today, but it just didn't happen. So that should go rather quickly, and we should get that entire course up there. And I then should be moving very quickly towards the book, trying to get the book out. Now, the militia course is another course. Again, I think it'll probably take me a week. I might be able to do that over the holiday. So we'll see what happens with that. I've got a lot of other things that I'm also trying to do at the same time, so, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think I can get that up in a week or two. We should be able to probably get some buttons up there on the... by the way, the militia information is found under the People's Duty. I did make some changes on our website because we used to have committee men there before we had the sheriff there. So right now we have People's Duty. And underneath that, you'll find the committee man information. You'll find the join the militia. You'll find party rules for the committee man, petition process, a registered committee man, and how to become a committee man. And there's a lot more information we're putting up there. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the committee man after we do these, you know, finish off with this question. So I'll come back to that. The other thing we're doing is we're putting together a handbook. I mean, we've got a lot of this already done. It just has to be really put together. But we're going to put together a handbook for administrators, jury administrators, so that they will know the process and the procedures and different things on how things work. I hope we'll cover as much as we can think of covering. And whatever we'll miss, we'll just keep adding to it. But we'll have a PDF booklet put together for that, probably a PDF handbook that we will eventually put into a regular handbook. But until we complete it, we'll keep it in PDF form. People will download it and use that as a guide. It'll also cover information like writing for the grand jury, writing necessary papers, and so on. And then, of course, we will be here every Monday night for advice. Anybody has any questions or concerns, advice, you know, we'll give what we can. And if they have any questions that we don't have the answers to, we will diligently search it out and get back to those people and post it for everyone else to have the same knowledge. So we should be able to cover all that. Now, with the administrators, and I don't want to get too deep into this. This is written up. Pretty sure we already have it written up. If not, I'll write it up. But generally speaking, we're setting it up where we have to monitor or police ourselves, so to speak. We're going to take a vow to nature's God, and everybody must operate with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And we are guided by the rules of natural law, common law, which we did a paper on that. And I think that paper, let's see, should be under weekly calls, under education down to weekly topics. And I think it's there. Let me take a quick look to see if it's there. Okay, I don't see it at the moment. But anyway, there is a paper that we did on this. But going back to keeping, everybody kind of on the straight and narrow path, if one person breaks away from their oath, you know, of being honorable, just and considering of mercy, you know, which is the three basic points that we talk about and teach. So if we kind of anybody goes astray from that, it's up to the other three to correct that person and bring them back into the fold, so to speak, requiring that they honor their oath. And again, we'll be under the common law. We'll have to be obedient to the Constitution. There'll be guidelines and regulations. We'll kind of write them up as best we can, figure it out. We'll add to that as we go. But this will, you know, guide us to make sure that we're all on the same page, that there's a uniform set of regulations for us so that we can all be acting the same way, being careful not to step on the freedom and liberties of the people on the grassroots level to do the things that they need to do. But it all gets back down to being honorable and just in what we're doing. And of course, being respectful to people and so on and so forth, making sure people have access to the grand jury and all those kind of things. But should a person act up and there's a problem, then the three can get rid of the one. Now, that one person that might be discharged by the other three, they have the opportunity of an appeal, let's say, so they can go to the one of the neighboring counties and go to them for an appeal, where they will then come in and sit with the people in that county, the administrators, find out what's going on, get both sides, and make a final judgment. Okay, and I think that should be a pretty good, way of trying to keep ourselves from going astray if we have some problematic people. I'm sure we will get some problematic people. And I'm sure we're probably going to have to get rid of some people. But again, there's a process we set up for it. And we can put maybe another fail-safe system into that process, maybe. But I think at this point, that should be sufficient. So that should protect us from that. Jan, can you read the question again now to make sure that I had answered all of the person's concerns?
Okay. It's a long question. Basically, they want to be able to assure that the jurists are qualified.
Qualification. Let's go to that. the qualifications, again, is getting the proper education, which is what we're giving the people here, okay? And, you know, if you become an administrator, you're asked certain questions. And again, the more and more experience you have, of course, the better it is. But those are the experiences that you really want to build up. But again, qualification, anybody can be a jury administrator as long as they follow the guidelines and the rules and the regulations that we set forth and honor their oath, their vow actually to God. They take a vow to God, so they honor their vow and being obedient not to violate anyone's rights during that process. I mean, anybody should be able to fill that position. We don't need to be rocket scientists or anything. And experience will make us better people. Also, you know, we'll have each county will have four groups of people, and there's a lot of noise out there. And anyway, each county will have four administrators working. And you'll find that some people will be more advanced in their abilities, maybe understand more things about how the court works, for instance. Not that that's very much involved, especially in a court of law. You know, that's really not as complex as it would be in a court of equity. So, but in any event, you'll have people who maybe some people could good articulators can speak well. Some people. Maybe you have some paralegal background. Some people was all just a legal background from their own experiences, and some people may be more educated in the processes that we're setting up because you know they're more diligent and focused and just become more educated. So between the four individuals involved, you work it out. The key thing to really working as an administrator is to see whether there is a, an injury somewhere. Someone comes in and they'd like to talk with the grand jury, or they have a problem with someone in government, some bureaucrat or something. 9 times out of 10, I think administrators should be able to deal with those problems without even having to bring them to the grand jury. Maybe a phone call could fix the problem. If necessary, maybe a visit could fix the problem. Maybe we can investigate. Again, these four individuals are also the investigative body for the grand jury. But the grand jury itself, once it's pulled together, they can investigate on their own. We can make sure that we clear the way, the doors for them to go to a place to maybe investigate some bureaucrat somewhere or something if necessary, if that's what it's about. But anyway, it gets back to being able to see an injury. It really gets that simple. And once you see an injury, how can we fix it? Can we fix it without even having to call the grand jury? Can we make a few phone calls, get the people together, the person being violated and the person that's the violator, and kind of work things out? If not, then we bring in the grand jury, and they make some decisions. Maybe they can arbitrate it better. And if not, then if it's a situation that requires an indictment, then they'll give that indictment. And then, of course, it goes to the jury. So it's a simple process. It's a people thing. Again, there's no real high education necessary, but to be able to proceed with under the rules of common law and operating according to the regulations and that we kind of put together to keep us uniform in the way that we act. So I don't know if I could say much more than that. Does that get the whole answer to the whole question, Jan, or is there another part that I missed?
No, I think that pretty well hit it.
Okay.
Next question then is, Brent talks about the state people's militia being separate from the contemporary National Guard. If Ohio had an established militia on May 4th, 1970, would the militia have been lawful in protecting protesters of the Vietnam conflict at Kent State University, where the National Guard opened up fire on protesters?
Well, look, I don't know the details back then. I'm aware of the incident. I have a certain amount of knowledge of it, but I don't know all that took place out there. Again, like I said, there are problems with the National Guard, okay? And I'm surprised that that kind of thing happened with them. But in any event, on the other hand, maybe I'm not, because, again, there are problems with the way they set up the National Guard. if you go read the Dick Act, you'll see exactly some of the problems there. And we're going to address those problems later on at some point in time. The people need to fix that problem, and it's a people problem. It's a people thing that needs to be fixed and worked out with the legislators, because they didn't properly do things, in my opinion. I believe Brent has. I know Brent is not too happy with the Dick Act in the sense that the way it organized militia, which is called the National Guard. And I agree with Brent. It should be called the militia of the several states. Now, as far as the unorganized militia is concerned, that's more of a county level. Not that they can't collectively bring themselves together on a state level, or shoulder to shoulder from county to county. Of course they can do that. They could do that shoulder to shoulder across the whole nation. And again, that's why we want to create a place to facilitate the militia. So where they can organize, communicate, and become educated. But the militia must be driven. We're going to put some uniform things together for them. We're going to negotiate them out with the different groups, and we're going to get the regulations laid out. We're going to get resolutions set forth, processes and procedures on how to approach the sheriff, for instance, and how to woo him in, so to speak, and make him part of the process. After all, and this you'll find in USC 10, which again is the Dick Act, the code, whereas it talks about posse comitatus. And posse comitatus, when the sheriff calls the posse comitatus, he's calling up the unorganized militia. He's calling up every able-bodied male that in that county that can step up with a weapon and defend for the call. So that process is pretty well laid out. We're going to use the Dick Act in order to approach the sheriff, because the unorganized militia should be under the auspices of the sheriff. But if you got a bad sheriff, the people are the people. He works for us. We'll fire him. Let's get rid of him if he's a bad sheriff. Let's do recall. You know, we could the militia itself could walk the necessary papers to recall that individual if we don't have control of the committee man process at that time. So that could be dealt with. So if we have a sheriff that's unwilling to be obedient to what the law actually is set up, is ignorant to the Constitution and is unwilling to learn, let's get rid of him. But we should have the committee man set up in next year. That's going to be running for office shortly. And once we get that going and people into those powers and authorities, then we're going to solve a lot of these problems with sheriffs or anybody, because we'll be able to recall any of them. So anyway, we'll be working through that process with the militias. And again, I think everybody should join the militia in your own county. And even if you can't make a lot of the meetings, you should be part of it, at least go from time to time. Everyone should have some kind of a connection there. And everyone should be responsive to should emergency break out in their county. But we got a lot of ideas and things, and they do too, that we got to all work out and get on paper and get the will of the people so we can make a uniform rules and regulations, I guess you'd call them, rules and regulations, be the same across the nation in every single county. So we are going to focus in to try to get people in every single county. We got 3,130-some-odd counties. I think it's 3,134. But some of those counties are, there's some counties that are very, very desolate, so to speak. There's not much of a populace there. So those counties we may not necessarily be able to do anything in. But generally speaking, let's say 3,000 counties to 3,050 or something like that, we need to organize them and get them together and operating. And that will protect the people. And also we'll deal with the problem with all of these different people who are trying to get all these gun laws and regulations going on guns. This will solve a lot of that problem, because again, The militia must be armed, okay? That's a requirement. And the Dick Act says it's every single, how does it put it? Every single able-bodied person, and from age 17, I don't know where, I think it gives a cap somewhere of 45, but that we can ignore. We can go higher than that. You know, I think as far as a requirement, maybe those that would be a good, you know, area, 17 to 45 maybe. But people who want to stay in that's over 45, of course, should be able to. And that's that. There's nothing to talk about there. But, you know, again, the idea is that everybody is part of the militia. You know, in the New York State Constitution, it refers to the militia as every able-bodied person, okay? Now, also, they have to be armed. And we're not talking to being armed with pistols. We're talking about being armed with rifles. We're talking about being armed with military-grade rifles and, of course, a pistol. So these are the things that are necessity, and this will end this crazy argument of these people that want to take away our rights of protection away from them once this becomes the norm, so to speak. You can't disarm the people. So, all right, anyway, let me move over. Do we have any more questions before I move over to talking about the committeemen?
Yes, we do have several. The next one. It's a little bit, I'm not sure. What is the name we use on the first page of the court case? For example, defendant versus plaintiff.
I don't know that I understand the question.
I don't either, John. I can't help you. Sorry.
Okay, read it again. I'll try to think about it.
What is the name we use on the first page of the court case? For example, defendant versus plaintiff. Or maybe they meant plaintiff versus defendant. I don't know.
Okay. Well, maybe I might have an idea what they're trying to say. on the front page, of course, you know, what's called the heading, and that's probably what they're talking about. And for instance, in the heading for what we've got, it depends on what kind of a case it is. Okay, if it's the person who's the plaintiff, then they would be on the top, and the defendant would be on the bottom. If it is a thing where it's being run through the grand jury and it's the people against the defendants. The way we set it up was the United States grand jury and the unified United States common law grand jury, and we call it the tribunal, the people, against, in this case, the United States Supreme Court, Federal Judiciary, U.S. Senate, U.S. House of Representatives, we called them the defendants. And so that's probably what they're talking about. When you get down to sign your name at the bottom, in pro per is probably a good way to do it. It's in your own person. I know people use pro se. That's okay, I guess. I like in pro per. So I guess that's what the information they're looking for. But next question.
Okay, this next one that deals with it is kind of a statement mainly about the USMCA and a replacement for NAFTA and Trans-Pacific Partnership. It goes into a lot of the things that are supposed to be very bad about it, much worse than what we had.
I saw that one. We did cover it last week. I did say look into it. I did look a little into it. I shared a little bit with Gerard and maybe some others, I don't remember, that they may be looking into it. It is a large document. I just don't have the time to go through it. What I have seen and it was pulled out doesn't people say all kinds of things out there. People say things and they don't even understand how things work, and they make comments on things that they think they know and they don't know. So we don't really know unless the people bring the facts out. Bring us the facts. If there is a code in there someplace, give us a page number, a line number, and tell us where it is. And then we can look at those that particular thing. We can also research that paper out to see what kind of constructive law might be built upon whatever that particular statement, item, line, or whatever it is. So for people to just say, well, it really stinks, it's a problem, it takes away our rights, and that's all meaningless stuff. It doesn't mean anything to me. So tell me, what is the line? What does it say? Show me where it's at and tell us, this is where the problem is. So people need to find the problems. If there are problems in there, they need to find those problems. If there are people that are doing their homework and their research and they're complaining about it, then they must have the facts. And if they don't have the facts, then they're very bad researchers, and I wouldn't trust anything that they're saying. And it's that simple. So we got to get the facts. So if people think that there's a problem, bring those areas of concern that's within that document so that we can examine them and look to see how that might be constructed inside that law. And that's the best I can do for you. But bottom line is, if it's repugnant to the Constitution, it's null and void. Now, I know that doesn't mean much to the courts today, but the courts tomorrow, it will mean everything, okay, because we will hold their feet to the fire and get rid of these people for bad behavior if they do not obey the law of the land. So we all already have a Constitution with the guidelines necessary for all of our elected and appointed and other bureaucratics, people that are working in the government, that they have to follow. They have to follow regulations. They have to follow statutes and codes. I mean, that's what Title 1 through 57 is all about. You know, they have to follow those procedures and processes. And if any of those things, and there's a lot of stuff in those codes that bleed out against the people, that's null and void. It's repugnant to the Constitution. Therefore, it's null and void, and we'll call it that. If people can find the problems, bring it to us, we'll examine it. If there is a problem, it will be something we will address at some point in the future, in our court cases. But first is first. First, we have to get back common law into our courts. That's the first order of business. We can't do anything until we can get common law back into our courts. Because right now they're shutting us down. Right now they're concealing the common law. And you know what's amazing to me? It really is amazing to me as I listen to see what's going on with Congress and with the Senate and what's going on with all of this stuff, trying to go up against Trump and impeach him and blah, 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 blah. And I hear these people talking, and all of a sudden they're talking about the Constitution. And what they're bringing up in the Constitution so far, what I have heard, is right on point. How come they haven't been bringing this up before? How could they have so much knowledge all of a sudden of the Constitution, how it works, but then they fall when it comes to the court system and the judicial process, which is everything? I mean, you know, if we don't have a lawful, just system, then we don't have any system at all, and it's destructive. But these people are capable of seeing this. I heard some senators talk. I heard some, and even a couple of congressmen, okay? But I heard a lot of senators talk, and they're looking hard at the Constitution, and they're talking as if the Constitution is still in effect. You see, on that level, the enemy can't come out and say, hey, by the way, Rule 2 got rid of all that. That doesn't work no more. Okay? Well, they can't say that, because then that would reveal who and what they are. You see, all this stuff was done covertly, and people don't know how bad it is. They don't know how horrible and repugnant our courts are until they get caught in those courts. And we're not talking about a court case where one person may have something against another person, and they may feel they didn't get justice or anything, but you got a court case and it doesn't get too affected on decision making, and they allow some judge to make decisions as an inequity court on a contract or something, that's fine. But go up against, the status quo. Go up against big corporation. Go up against pharma. Go up against the IRS. Go up against any government agent or agency. Go up against the federal judges themselves. And believe me, you'll see the Nazism and communism come out, and the boot will come down upon you. But they hide all that, and they don't talk about it. But when you talk to a lot of these lawyers, they'll tell you, oh, common law, that's been abrogated. They've been totally brainwashed. They're minions for the New World Order, a lot of these bar attorneys. Not all of them, but most of them. and they're minions of the New World Order, and they're true believers. They truly believe the system is good and works for them, because they're putting a lot of money in their pocket, of course, I'm sure that's why. But other than that, they have no problem saying, oh, common law's been done away with, forget about it. They have no problem with that. They don't understand what they're saying. Common law gone, Bill of Rights is gone. Declaration of Independence, the foundation of our law, is gone. It's a common law document. Both are common law documents. The Constitution of the United States, common law document, gone. It's all gone. It's not here no more. So, my point, though, anyway, is that they're being very careful. There's no resistance against the truth concerning the conversation of how things should run in the Senate and in the Congress concerning, going through this impeachment situation and due process and all these good things. Apparently, these people haven't been in the courts, though, because they don't know. Well, maybe they do know. There's Nazis in our, or communists, or socialists, or whatever name you want to give them, running our courts from the federal district all the way down into the towns. They're just filled with anti-constitutional common law individuals. So, okay, what else we got here?
Next, is it still safe to write the words under duress next to your autograph or signature on the W-4 tax form?
It doesn't do any good either way. If anything, it'll probably mark you as someone, hey, this is a guy we've got to watch. Let's audit him. I don't know. So I'd be careful. If you're filling out those forms and sending them in, I would be really careful about putting anything contradictive to what they've laid out for you to do. You know? You look at either you resist them or you go along with them. And I understand why a lot of people go along with them. I understand that. They've been stuck between a rock and a hard place. And they've corralled you into a situation, and you're being reported on. And then you got to go face this big machinery, you know. I understand. So you kind of pay the criminals. But their day's coming. It's coming real soon and real quick, I believe, anyway.
Okay, last question. My one relative and I had an argument over the power of the county sheriff, and I stated that the sheriff, under common law, has the authority to convene a grand jury, and he refuted against it and undermined the sheriff's authority in general. He also claimed the independent states have the unlimited authority to make laws regardless of consistency with the Constitution, for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights. If I am correct, the states cannot infinitely make their own laws overzealously as to counter the unalienable God-given rights.
Well, first of all, I'm wondering if that person's talking about judges and lawyers and all those people, because that's the kind of belief and thinking that they have, is that no one could call the grand jury except us. Well, we're the only ones. You can't call a trial jury. You can't call a grand jury. We got to do that. I mean, that's their attitude. That's their belief. They are taught this in school. Just think about that. They are taught this in school. Therefore, it must be true, right? I mean, that's their attitude. They're well-trained minions of the New World Order. Now, other people that are not lawyers and stuff, through ignorance again, just like the lawyers and these judges, they too believe the same thing. Maybe they've been told something or they read something and they believe it. And that's that. Again, you know, anytime you read anything and if it has any value or any worth or anything that you're going to kind of stake your thinking and your life on, well, if it's not showing you the sources so that you can look those sources up and rest on a solid ground, then I wouldn't believe any of it. I'd take it with a grain of salt. I learned my lesson a long time ago. You have to check everything out. If you're gonna start building some your mindset and thinking on top of something because you want to get involved, like with what we're doing with the law, then you want sources. If you read our paperwork, we have an abundance of sources. every time you move through our sentences, you'll see footnotes everywhere. And that's so people could check it out and feel comfortable and know that we've got the truth. These are the facts, just the facts. That's what they are. So, again, people believe what they're told, and they're not taught, and we don't teach our children to do these things either. They just become true believers of whatever propaganda is sprouted out onto them. Next.
That's the end of the list, John. You're done.
All right. All right, anyway, just real quick, we'll get into more detail later on this, not later today, but later in the coming weeks. Like I said, we're setting up for the militia. I hope everyone joins and becomes and gets the support behind these other people in the militia. I don't know all the details yet on how we're going to work, because that's all got to be discussed between the people who are really organizing this, and we're going to assist them in every way we can to keep them lawful and safe. And, of course, Brent will be doing that particular job also with them. And but, you know, I suggested to them something like, let's just take a half a dozen people. You know, the militia gets constituted in a county when they have X amount of people. And maybe X amount of people in the beginning might be six people, half a dozen people. I don't know. That's what they have to decide. And we have to get some regulations going on this so that we're all uniform in our actions. And, you know, one county might say, well, we'll do it with 8 or 10, another one may 6, but we got to get some kind of guideline in there. But the thing is this, is once you get, let's say, 6, then that's when, and you've already, you know, come together and you defined who you are, maybe get a seal. Why not have a seal? I should have an address. Tap into the gun clubs in the county. Okay, because that's where you can go to practice and also pick up a lot of other potential militia individuals who might want to jump in. But once they get to a certain point, then they can make moves. Let's say then they can approach the sheriff. But they have to get together and define themselves, adopt the rules and the resolutions and work on all those things. And then we're going to put together sort of a plan on how to approach the sheriff. And so we'll write a lot of things up, and we'll be negotiating those things and working that out. So it'll be very well put together and organized that the sheriff will have no choice but to say, yeah, I'll work with you guys. And look, you be obedient to the law, because that's what we're going to stand on, and the sheriff should love that. And we're going to empower him. Plus, he through the militia, he's going to build up more people for more votes, you know. So he'll have more constituents and a more powerful constituents. And also the ability, if something happened where he needed the manpower, like we saw going down in Virginia, and, well, I'll just call up a couple thousand people, posse comitatus, and we'll deal with you, talking to the governor and others. And that's it. So I think it's going to be a very successful project. I don't know how long it's going to take to build up. It could build up quickly. And it could build up slowly, but it needs to be built up. We also have the committee man issue working our way through the system now. And I don't know if Jeff is on the line. If Jeff is here, maybe you can get into the queue, Jeff, and maybe, I don't know if you finished that research I asked you to check out. But we do have a list of all of the dates for every state and when they're going out to run, to walk papers in order to become a committee man. And there's a couple of states that are doing it in March. Let's see, January, February, March. All the rest of them are doing, you know, April, May, June, and even all the way up to July and August. So you have to walk your petitions within a window of time. I know in New York it's 6 weeks. I think it starts sometime in May and ends in June. And it's a six-week period, and that's when you walk your petitions, and you have to hand them in within that time period. So we're going to establish all that. We got a lot of work already done over the holiday here, creating and putting together these pages where people can get information on the militia and also on the committee men. We've got the petition process. If people want to look at that, you go out to People's Duty on the blue bar, come down to petition process. And there's a guy here, Lenny Roberto. He was the guy that taught me. So I have his videos. It's a six-part video. It's probably about 60 minutes long, roughly speaking. And he goes through the process of filling out the petition. So anybody that wants to become a committee man should be going out here now. And there are two petitions you can download. One's a Republican designating petition. It's a PDF download. And the other one is a Democratic designating petition. You make sure you use the right one. And then you follow to the letter. Do not think. I'll put this information, more information. I'll write some stuff up on this page. Do not think when you look at that form, this is a piece of cake, and you think you're going to sit down and fill that form and get in. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. There's all kinds of minds in there. And the way that this process, if you're not clear on what you're doing, you're not going to get in. They'll throw your paperwork out. And so this guy here, Lenny Roberto, he goes through every step, every point of this process. And it's the same thing on the Democratic designating petition and the Republican. They're both the same. But he goes point by point, all the way down, line by line, all the way down on how to fill out this petition. And it really isn't complex, but the thing is there are a few places that you got to be really careful not to make a mistake, because if you do, they'll throw it out. So everybody should watch this video. If you have any questions after you have that, watch that video, you can come here to the Monday Night Programs and ask questions, and we'll try to supply the answers. I'm kind of rusty on this. We've been at this for years. I'll sit down maybe during the week and go through the video again and make sure that I, refresh myself with this stuff. Now, on this page, we will also post the times to walk your petition. Now, we're going to try to be safe on this. Let's say if someone is running, let's say the state filings for this and the runoff is a particular date, let's say March 30th, let's say, I don't know. So what we will do is we will count 6 weeks back from that and then 2 weeks forward. So we'll count back 4 weeks, and we'll give a window of time of a week to 10 days. And that's when you want to walk your petition and get it filed. We'll give information on how to get a walking list, and if you have problems, how to deal with that problems, how to get it, even if people are resisting you. We'll give you information on, and where to go, who to talk to find out exactly. So you may go down and to the Board of Election, for instance, and find out exactly what is the window of time for going in and filing these petitions. Usually in January, they post the calendars up for this up on the government, state gov, whatever, state.gov, whatever your state is, .gov. And you'll go looking for the Board of Election. And when you get to that page, you can really just run Board of Election for your state, and you'll go right to that page. And it's a government website. And when you get to that page, right on that page should be the calendar, which you'll be able to download. Now, if we can get some volunteers on this to go out starting in January in different states and download those calendars, and we can then post those calendars for each state, and then we can highlight the time period that in particular on when they need to be walking those petitions, then you'll have a six-week window to walk instead of a week to 10-day window. But again, this is not difficult stuff. You don't need a lot of signatures. Most places you need anywhere from 5 to 20 signatures, depending on how many people are in your election district. You only need 5% of your party members that sign up as whatever Republican or Democrat in that, in your election district. But you will be met with resistance. We'll give you and tell you how to get around that resistance. We'll give you information. And occasionally you may get to the point where you just hit a rock and you can't get past it. Well, we'll show you how to get around that rock. But that'll come in time. and we're still kind of organizing that. And I'm hoping, you know, I'm really hoping that maybe next Monday or the following Monday we'll have all that paperwork up there, with the exception of working more precisely on those calendars, the window of filing your designating petitions. Now, designating petitions, once filed, and trust me, you will not have any competition. Nobody is running for committeeman. They don't know how to run for committeeman. They use, and the ones that, when they do the paperwork, it's a con job, and they use the wrong title. So it's a nothing title. You know, they call themselves the members of the county committee. It's nothing. It means nothing. And but we'll teach you and show you exactly what needs to be done on that. But anyway, we're going to post all that information. So if we can have any volunteers, if we can get maybe, you know, 5 to 10 volunteers, 10 would be great, and then we'd give each one of those 10 people 5 states to go and get these calendars from. And they may not be available yet, but every week go up there and look to see if the calendars are available yet. Once they're available, you download them. It's in a PDF, and you get them to us. You know, you'll email them to us. But we'll write down where to email these things to, and then we can highlight the dates. The dates for each state and post them. So that would be really good to work out that way, and then we're really definitely in shape. But if we can't get them, we'll give you. We got a walk around for this, so we'll give you another way to deal with this problem, which really is counting back 30 days from the date of the primary election. Okay, let me think. So we have videos going. We got this one video up now. We're probably going to have another video put up there. We're going to get into each state and make some detailed information on each one of these states. And we're going to do some write-ups on some other things and strategies and also information on what kind of resistance you're going to be met with, and again, how to get around these problems. So that's going to take a couple of weeks to put together, but it is something we're working on, and you can see we've already started on this. Now, again, we've already talked about the militia. If you go into People's Duty and you click on Join the Militia, again, there's no join button yet. It's coming soon. And when you join the militia, we'll have a counter up here like we do with all the rest of our membership. We're going to put how many people are in the militia, how many people are committeemen, how many coordinators we have up already. We have leaders, we have coordinators, we have organizers, we have administrators, and we have total members. And we've constituted every county, so that shows up also. So we're going to add the committeemen, and we're going to add the militia up here. Okay. And so anyway, we'll get that all this stuff done hopefully in the next couple of weeks. But we can use some volunteers to help us for researching stuff. If you can participate, send an email to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. He's still traveling, or he's away. He'll be traveling soon back home. And so he may not get back to you until the weekend after the holiday here, after the weekend. Send your emails into them if you can participate. Those who are already active, if you got some time and can help, just let Jan know. But it'd be ideal to get 10 people, because then you only have 5 states apiece to go look up. But if we can only get 5 people, then you have 10 states apiece. But we do need this information, and it's vital to get it now. We can't be waiting weeks. We need to get it within a week or two. We can't be waiting months, let's put it that way. Okay, so I guess that's it for that. We'll have a lot of more announcements on the committeemen and the militia as we go. We also have a sheriff's page, which we did move, because we used to have the sheriff, then we moved the sheriff out, and we put the committeemen, and then the militia came in, so we put People's Duty up there. So the sheriff, eventually I'll move over in underneath that same tab under People's Duty. So we'll put the sheriff under there, sheriff's page. And hopefully we'll get some sheriffs that'll join up with us and take our courses and get involved as the militia kind of woos them in. And then they start to see what the real law is and what's really going on. And if you have sheriffs educated, You got, you know, 3,100 and change sheriffs. If you got your sheriffs educated in the law, and they understand what the law is, and you got the militia educated in the law, and you got the committeemen educated in the law, and you got the administrators of the juries educated in the law, our country would be safe. I mean, we would, that it would be huge at that point. And that, of course, is our goal. So, okay. I think that's all I got.
John, I want to give some of the rest of the story here on some of the stuff you talked about. I put in your and Jan's Skype box and a little short video about the USCMA and the write-up that the New American did on it and what's the matter with it. And basically, just real quick, it's the same thing as the European Union. It takes away the sovereignty of the people. They're going to give workers rights that they give them that they can take away at any time. Basically, it institutes unions. And look, unions were instituted here when business was taking over, but look at how bad they got. And Mexico is a corrupt government. It doesn't matter what you think. They are a socialist government. So how good are they going to be at setting up fair trade labor unions? And Nancy Pelosi says the USMCA is the best deal. She said this in December 10th of this month, that it's the best deal going. So, you know, the social Democrats, the socialists, if they think it's a good deal, you better watch out. You see, the trouble is once you get into this, it's hard to get out. Look at what they're going through in Europe to get out of that European Union, which takes their sovereignty away. That's what they're screaming about. There is no national sovereignty when it makes laws on trade that affect all of us, but there'll be no constitution involved here. You get whatever rights they say, and they can change them and do whatever they want with them. So it's not a good thing.
Yeah, but I'm missing this though. I really am. I'm hearing everything you're saying. I'll have to take a look what you got and what you put out there. You know, for me to take a look at. Does it give us page lines and, you know, numbers?
He goes all through it. He tells you how many pages you go here. You do that. Look, the John Birch Society never makes claims that they don't stand behind. That's why they want to smear them, because they give you the information. And he talks about what they're saying and what they've changed. We've had a North American agreement between Canada, United States, and Mexico. It has never been good. It was never a good thing. It's a socialist program designed to get rid of our sovereignty, and that's what it does.
Do you have the time to pull together this full research and break it down to the, you know, the nuts and the bolts without all of the trimmings and stuff?
You should hear the language that they put in there. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's what we need to see. And we need to also look within the context.
It sounds like the gun law. Did you hear what Virginia put in for a gun law? You know, a thing with a combustible thing with this and that and this, and that has a stock that has this. Basically, they're outlawing all guns with their language, and that's kind of like what this language that the Democrats put in this North American trade agreement. Is no good.
Well, look, I don't want to waste too much time on it, but we will come back to this. We'll have to do some research first and then maybe do it. But again, if you can pull together that stuff and we can sit down and look through it and then we can research it deeper and start to look at the meaning of words that are in there, you know, because, you know, anytime you get law, they always have a place where these words mean this and that word means that. You know, they define certain meanings. They also have by what authorities it should be in there. But, you know, if we can detail all the stuff, there's not much we could do about it right now. And I don't think it's something we need to worry about. We need to about
well, here's the deal. They voted on it on the 19th, but the Senate's not going to vote on it until after the impeachment thing. So,
well, that gives us time. Maybe we can get to the Senate before they vote on it.
Right. And what they're asking is that you call all your senators, because it makes a difference.
Yeah, but we'll do it from a different perspective, from the grand jury bringing into the courts that we have going right now. And
right.
We'll approach them from that perspective, from that position. But the thing is we have to really work and dig deep down into this and understand the meaning of these things and then put it plain on the paper and show how it violates anything. And you know, look at this trade agreement probably should go through, But if there are problems in there, it needs to be repaired. And maybe the Senate, if we can get them in time, will reject it. But if we don't get them in time, it's not that we can't deal with this. We could, if we get our courts back to just courts again, we can deal with it in the court.
Well, do you understand what's wrong with the European Union? Do you understand that?
No, I don't know.
Well,
don't
the
know
European
the
Union is a socialist, communist thing that takes away all those states' sovereignty. They have no say over their money and over their trade.
Well, again, if you're talking about that line basically it's working on through a highway, no? A highway system going through from three countries.
It's talk about. It's how the trade is run between the countries, and
I'm totally ignorant in this, so I can't really speak on it.
Well, you never heard Nigel Farage get up there and talk against it and speak.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've heard him talk about a lot of things.
Well, Nigel gives you all the reasons of what's wrong and why they're so ticked off about it, and so it's a social social program. And if Nancy Pelosi says it's infinitely better, I don't trust it to begin with. If she thinks it's infinitely better, that means it's infinitely more communist than it was before. This is just changes. We have the UMCA. This is changes.
How many pages is this?
Hundreds of pages. Hundreds and hundreds.
You see, therein is the problem.
But he said, look at, just listen to that video I sent you. He said, look at, you go here and it tells you about this, and then this is contained here. But basically, there's 27 pages that spell out what you, he breaks it down for you right there in five minutes.
I'll look into it.
There's 27 pages that have the meat and potatoes, and here's where they are. I mean, in 5 minutes, he gave all the information. Yeah, we got to go through it and look at it. But I've learned to trust their assessment of things. They don't come off and say things lightly, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they're very constitutional, and that's why they're so hated, and that's why they were so smeared.
All right, I'll look into it, and maybe I can make some defining points of what I need in order to really look deeper and get people to do that work, because I don't have the time for research here on those things.
Well, all I can tell you is my parents were John Birch members, and I knew what the CFR was in the Trilateral Commission when I was 12 years old. And for people to back in the 60s and 50s to even know that is amazing to me. There was no computers, and that's what they were screaming about. So I've learned to trust their assessment on these things as far as, what's constitutional, what's not. So
until we do our research, I think we can't really say too much on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just have to do our research and see where it goes. And again, we just need the people to help us get that, the bulk work of that research. Again, if we have something I can look at that, and you said you send it to me, so I'll look at that. I'll make some notes and say, well, this is what I need, and if people can draw all this stuff out, then we can now do the work. Now we can really come to an understanding.
Well, if it's the little sister of what do you call it over there in Europe, the European Union, I can tell you right now, there's nothing good about it.
Right.
The reason they're all screaming over there is because it's ruined their countries, but we'll do the research, and I'm sure it'll pan out. And the other thing, we had a question about, would the militia have, would it have been better to call the militia out instead of the National Guard for the Kent State, protests? Would they have been able to have their protests? First of all, the military is not designed as a peacekeeping unit. They should never be using the military. The reason you don't want to use military in your streets, because the military is designed to take over, to destroy, to repel a force that's coming in, or to go and subdue a country. They have a completely different MO as a police agency does. Your local police agencies, if there's a protest, it could be a legal protest and it can turn illegal. If they're going to stop people from going through streets with their protests, now they're breaking the law. You know what I mean? So you don't want the military making those decisions on who's breaking the law and arresting those lawbreakers.
Absolutely
police officers
not, right?
And police forces, local police forces, are designed to keep, they call them P peace officers for a reason. When you're in the military, you're not a peace officer. You're not making peace, you're making war. And if you're not taking land, then you're a sham. And that's the problem with our military. We've turned them into a police force. That's what the whole Vietnam thing was and everything. No. You're supposed to go in and have definite goals. You're supposed to go in and run the campaign. And Brent has talked about this. I remember it with him talking about what the goals and what is a just war and how it's run. You don't use the military as a police force ever. It's nothing but a disaster. They're not designed for that. You know?
Well, I don't know that anybody disagrees with that point. Of course, you know. I mean, it was the Kent State. I have no idea why they called them out on that. It didn't even make sense.
It was because it's another using the military against the people. It was the reason they did it is so that we could get to where we are today. It was just another step in that direction. Right. You know, and of course they ended up somebody shot and somebody heard something and it was like a big mistake, but it shouldn't have happened. And like I said, they shouldn't have been there in the first place. It should have been local police. And if somebody's having a legal protest for something, whether it's gun control or whatever, and they get out of hand and they stop people from going into businesses or doing whatever they're doing, they start breaking the law. The local police aren't going to start a civil war over it. What their job is to protect the peace. So then what happens is if they're not letting people go out on a certain street and it's getting dangerous, then it's up to the police to stop other people from going in there and getting attacked and say, okay, we're going to close these streets off, let them quiet down. But you don't start a war with these people. You know, when you're talking about a local protest over whatever the protest is. So I don't, you know, military is not a good one for that. Your police forces are more trained on how to handle an irate and keep the peace and that type of stuff. And that's the problem. That's why we had the Posse Comitatus that said they can't use the military against the people. And it's for those reasons right there. You know?
Yeah, so
I just wanted to clarify that.
All right. Well, are you going to take the board now? Move over to Brent, or do you have anything else to add? Anything about the committee?
No, that's it. I just want to make those two points. Check out that thing that's in your
box.
Are
you rusty on the committee, man, or do you, or what? I know I got to go back and brush up on it. It's been a while since I spoke about it.
So. Yeah, there's a couple key points, and I got to brush up on it too. But I know that, a big one is let's say I live in a hamlet. And my address is a certain address, like you have Pearling, New York. You can't put that on. You have to put your voting district. See, my voting district is Cairo, New York, right?
Right.
Even though my address says Pearling, they'll throw it out.
That's where one of those tricky questions are. And I know, what's his name?
Lenny.
Lenny, yeah, I know Lenny covers this in great detail. On
he has all of that, of that, yep.
I mean, everything has to be right, you know?
Right.
And,
so,
you know, you got to start from your state, go to your county, down to your town, and then to your ward, and then your election district. I mean,
you
got to
be very
precise.
You know, if we had good
precise.
Judges, John, it would be easier, because a good judge wouldn't let them throw you out for putting your actual mailing address in.
Yeah.
It didn't say the district. You know, everybody knows that hamlet is in that town's voting district. So if you put your town and your zip code in, it should go. But, you know, if they're looking for excuses to throw things out, that's how they nitpick, you know?
Right.
So anyway,
all right, well, we're gonna get into the
Lenny's video is the best because,
it,
like you said, it just explains everything.
And we'll get into these details and questions on these things as time goes on. But that's going to be a couple more weeks down the road before we start to really get active.
Right.
So, and Jeff, if you're online tonight, get a hold of me tomorrow and let's see what information you got, and maybe you might want to help start collecting the calendars. That's the way we should have went. I forgot about the calendars. We go out to the, just put in the state and Board of Election, and you'll go right to the page where the calendar is. It'll give real quick to Google. It'll show you right where it's at. So we'll have to draw them down. Okay. All right. I'm going to pass.
Is Brett here?
Yeah. Terry okay. said he was here.
Okay. I'm kind of looking, but I'm not.
I think it was Terry. Who said that Brent
Wait,
was
no,
here?
No, I said it, but he's on as Jan. So we have four Jans on right now as hosts. And
okay.
Brent,
we gotta fix all that. Okay. So
yes, and I will work it. This
right.
is the first time Brent.
You know the problem where it's at, right?
I know the problem where it's at. I can
okay.
help fix it.
All right. So every person that's coming in is Jan, and every person that's coming in is John Duresh. Okay. You got to get a hold of Terry, or Terry, you got to get a hold of them and fix it so that you have your real name up there and we know who you are. So with that, we're going to move over to Brent, and I'll pass the board over to Gerard. Brent is the author of the book Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters, and his website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent, you got the mic. Well, maybe you don't.
Well, that worked real well, didn't it?
Star 6,
well,
Brent.
The real Brent, stand up, please.
I think
no,
it's a Star 6. Is it Star 6 on mute?
No. He is on the computer. So all he has to do is unmute himself.
Right. And he has the host ability.
Oh, okay.
Now.
Yeah, there's a he'll see the little red cross.
I think I'm coming in as NLA.
Turns gray and the slash goes away.
Brent.
Do you know which Jan he is?
I don't. I know which one I am because it's lighting up now when I talk.
Yeah. Oh, you're coming in as Jan, too. You were coming in before as me.
Yeah, because I had trouble.
Yeah. Well, make sure you get a hold of Terry this week and fix that. She'll work
he just sent me a message. He unmutes himself, but it doesn't work.
Really?
And I think it would be this one. And I can't seem to unmute him.
Hmm. But he's got the app?
Yeah, I think he's got the app. Hit the little microphone up the top, Brent. He's answering me. I can getting on the phone. Okay, he's going to get on the phone.
All right, well, if you look at on that little app, there's a little like a little arrow that you click on to do the compact view. And when you click on that, that's when the mic will show up and you'll see it's red. Click on it and turn it gray and you're good.
Right. That sounds like that could be him. We're not getting much volume out, whoever it is.
Well, call me when you have your time to take this, because it takes a while to get out.
He's probably the bottom Jan above Ed in Arizona.
Yeah, and Brent, it's open, but we're not getting much volume out. Oh, he's in the queue. Let's see.
Brent, Indiana, that's him there?
Yeah, I clicked on him. Brent, go ahead.
Boy, that took quite a while, didn't it? This afternoon, Jan and I got together and tested all this out, and it's not working now, but I'm here. So if it's all right, I'll continue.
I'm getting a terrible echo.
I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Are you coming in two different
Must
ways?
Be.
Because I hear the two voices coming through on you.
Oh, now you're hearing me on the... Maybe the computer's working now.
I'm hearing
right.
you both ways, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let me shut the phone off and try the computer.
Good idea.
Okay, here I am.
There you go.
We yeah. got you.
Okay, Brent Winters,
oh,
you got
good.
It.
I swear.
Hey, Brent. Brent.
Here I am. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a PDF copy or a written copy of that militia booklet you got? so that I can cut and paste and create a course out of it? Did we lose you?
You got me now?
There yep. you go. Yep.
I'll be. Well, I'll do if I can. If I'm coming through, I'll continue. Yes, I can do that, John.
When you get a chance, you know, either email it to me or drop it in my Skype, and then I'll start the course right away. I think I can get it up together okay. in a week. So, okay? All right. You got the mic.
All right. Well, let's talk.
Thank and Gerard, you got the board, right?
Yep, yep.
Because I just got a call from my son shortly. I got to run, so.
Okay.
My name is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. You can go to the website, find a lot of things to listen to. I think there's over 200 MP3 clips there, but today we want to focus on not generally our common law, but specifically the militia of the several states, as our Constitution puts it. There are four militia clauses. Four. The last of the militia clauses is well-known. That's the Second Amendment. Of those four militia clauses, three of them delegate duties to three classes of persons. The fourth one, the Second Amendment, delegates nothing. It recognizes that God has delegated a duty. Duty. That's what the word right means. It's a duty. It's not something you can avoid. If you're a member of the militia, you're a member of the militia. You don't join the militia. It's impossible at common law to join the militia. No, you're born into it. It's not even your choice. I have a friend down in Georgia. He's about my age, a little older. And on his birth certificate, it tells him what juror entity he is in as a militiaman. All male children born in that state when he was born back about 1950 recognized that he would at the appropriate age, whatever it was in Georgia, he's a member of the militia. I got an email, and I like it when I get emails. Surprised I don't get more emails, people disagreeing with me. Let me read what this person said, and I thank this lady for this email. Don't want to say her name, don't have her permission, but I want to read what she said. She said, "Brent, I so disagree with your conclusion that women are not a part of the militia movement." She continues, "Coming from farm and ranch in western Nebraska, where my three older brothers were in the militia, my mom showed me what my job would be if the militia were called. We were to assist the injured, refill ammunition, make sure food was available.
Brent, we just lost you. So whatever you did there, it quieted you.
I don't hear him either.
I don't either.
Yeah, Brent, it's got to be on your machine. So something you just touched turned off your mic. Whatever you did, try and reverse it. Try now, Brent.
I think I see him, but...
Yeah, I think I see him, too, and it was an excellent the start of an excellent monologue.
This is like the longest drum roll into Brent that we've had yet.
Yeah, I'll get with him and we'll straighten it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something on his machine that he doesn't know that particular thing will change his mic or something.
Right.
Brent, we're still not hearing you. Talk whenever you can.
Yeah, he's not in that active speaker things anymore. He disappeared, so I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, he hung up the phone. That's why he's not in the active speakers.
Oh, okay.
I coordinate with him on Skype, and you go ahead with whatever you want to do, Gerard.
Well, I'll start taking the people from the queue and answering questions here while we wait for Brent to come out of cyberspace. Which means that Ed from Arizona is first in line, so I'll open Ed up here. Okay, Ed, you're on. Can you hear me? Hopefully. Ed from Arizona, are you there? I'm not hearing you. Calling once.
I hope it's not contagious.
I know. I don't hear a peep out of him. We got Enrique from California next. Let me try opening Enrique up and see what happens. I'll leave Ed up there for a minute. Enrique, you're open. Can you hear me?
I can. Good evening. You hear me?
Okay. All right. So you might as well go ahead.
Okay, well, I just wanted to first of all read Amendment 7. It says, mm-hmm. Due to common law, where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by any jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rule of common law. And also, somebody asked about the Constitution and the states' rights, where they supersede the Constitution. According to the California Constitution, reside. Article 3, Section 1 states that the state of California is an civil part of the United States, and the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And one more comment was that somebody asked about the different names to use in one of the forms, and I was under the impression that instead of plaintiff and defendant, we should use prosecutor and wrongdoer. That's about all I got. Thank you.
I'm having trouble. You sound very low to me. I don't know. Is it just me? I'm having trouble hearing.
Can you hear me now?
Who's that, Brent?
Yeah, this is Brent.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Well, let me finish up with the question that I opened up. Who did I open up? I don't know who. I might have. Oh, and... No, is Enrique was talking, or?
Yeah, let me unmute Enrique.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Enrique.
Okay, yeah, I might have been a little bit too far away from the phone when I was speaking earlier. So, yeah, I was just reading the Seventh Amendment.
And, yeah, we got that part. And then,
okay, and then I lost it. Then it's the California Constitution, Article 3, Section 1. States that the state of California is an inseparable part of the United States of America, and the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That kind of...
That's right.
Yeah, and finally, somebody mentions what names to put on the documents, and instead of plaintiff and defendant, somewhere I heard that we should be the prosecutors, and they would be the wrongdoers.
Right,
That's all I got.
Sounds good. Yeah. Yeah, you have to kind of watch your language, you know. Sometimes they know the difference and sometimes they don't, but you know, they like to play word magic and suck you into something by you using the wrong term. But anyway, they do what they want anyway. So, Brent, I'm going to back up and let you finish. You were in the process of talking about this woman that wrote you a letter
Yeah.
And she disagreed with you, and that the woman's place was to support the militia, and you go ahead. You might as well go from there.
Yeah, and we don't want to say that it's not as well. Men have an undelegable, that means they can't delegate it, duty to bear a weapon because they're part of the militia. The female of the species does not have a mandatory duty to bear a weapon. That doesn't mean that women shouldn't know how to use a gun. It doesn't mean that they wouldn't feel a duty if they saw it needed to be done. I wouldn't go so far as to say that they should be like Molly Pitcher. We learned about Molly Pitcher when I was in high school. No, grade school. Molly Pitcher was the gal whose husband was a artilleryman. That means he helped operate a cannon during the American separation of the war for separation from Britain. And she insisted on going with him when he went to battle. And the men that were there said she could chew tobacco and cuss better than they could. It's not that Molly Pitcher is anything that anybody would be attracted to or anything that females would want to be like. And her husband was killed in battle. And the legend is she picked up his part and carried on. And the legend also is that a cannonball, as she was reaching for another charge of powder, she stepped one leg forward and a cannonball from a British gun passed between her legs, right under her crotch. It caught her dress, ripped it off, her petticoat, the whole caboodle, and all that was left was some of it sticking out of the mud bank behind her. And she turned with a cigar in her mouth or some kind of tobacco she was smoking, and she said to the man behind her, if that had been a little higher, it would have taken off something else. And, of course, sprinkled it with a lot of words we don't want to say in polite company. Although those things really do happen, that doesn't mean that women have an affirmative duty that makes them liable under law if they don't feel it to carry a weapon and participate in battle. She became famous just because she did that. But it is a fact that the female of the species is not part of the militia. If the female of the species does not participate in the militia, our common law has never said she would be fined or sent to jail. That's not true of the male. Always the male has been liable to answer a call to duty. Had a fellow tell me the other day, we were talking about this on our Saturday contracts class on the internet, and I was talking about the concurrent jurisdiction of the president with the governors of each one of the states. Our law calls it concurrent jurisdiction. In other words, both the presidents of the United States and the governors of the states have a jurisdiction, a right, at the same time to call out the militia. The governors have the jurisdiction to call out the militia of their state. Each of them do. But the president of the United States has jurisdiction under the Constitution to call out the militia of that same state, or of all the states, or some of the states, or just part of the militia of one state, or whatever he wants to do, he can do, if it's according to law. Now, there's a standard the Constitution gives as to when the president has authority to call out the militia. Well, he said to me, well, I really chafe at the idea that the president can just call up people to serve the militia anytime he wants, and if they don't do it, he could have them hung or sent to jail. Well, I said, well, that's true that he could have them hung or he could have them prosecuted. He couldn't do it himself. According to law, they'd have to go through the proper due process and tribunals. But the thing that mitigates that dangerous power, and it is a dangerous power, is that the president can only call up the militia for the reasons the Constitution lists. And then to add another safeguard to that, the Congress of the United States, says the four militia clauses, has the duty to set the standard whereby the president can measure the rule of law. That's what a rule of law is. It's something you use to measure. It's not a command necessarily. That's different. The rule of law is a measurement, a standard by which a person can measure the circumstances and say, does this situation rise to the level on the ruler, on the barometer, on the measuring instrument that allows me to call out the militia according to these four reasons the Constitution provides? So then you have that. So that's the second safeguard. Then you have a third safeguard that the militiamen in the states, the officers of the militia in each state, says the four militia clauses of our Constitution of the United States, the states themselves have to choose the officers. The president or the federal government or the general of the army or the joint chiefs of staff have no authority to appoint officers to the militia of each of the individual states. No, the states can do that. They do that. They have authority to do that, and they have authority to say how it will be done, whether the officers will be elected, as it was in early America. Officers, I remember reading about the Black Hawk War. The Black Hawk War. The Black Hawk War was the war in what is now the state of Illinois against the Black Hawk, the Red Men. And the call went out for the militia to muster all over the state. The Black Hawk were up around, well, in northern Illinois, in Peoria, and Abe Lincoln was in southern Illinois. Well, they mustered. They sent out letters from the state capitol, whether it was Vandalia or Springfield or wherever it was at that time, to muster the militia. Abe Lincoln answered the call, and then an election was held to elect officers for their militia unit. And Abe Lincoln was in the running to be elected, and another fellow, I believe his name was Armstrong. And the militiamen said, here's the way we're going to do it. Now, this is legend and possibly apocryphal, but probably some truth in it. They said, this is the way we're going to do it. We're not going to vote. We're going to have a wrestling contest, and the man that wins the wrestling contest is our choice. And that's what they did. And I'd read, too, sometimes they had what they called a crowbar throwing contest. A crowbar throwing contest. When I read this story, I was a boy, and my brother and I used to have crowbar throwing contest. It's hard to throw a crowbar. There's a knack to it. You have to develop a skill in the how you do it, not your muscle doesn't make it go so far as your skill. I figured that out after a year or two. Well, that's the way they do things back then. But the point being, the federal government did not appoint the officers of the militia back then. And the Constitution of the United States says it just that away. That's the reason why they didn't do it. Why does the Constitution of the United States say that? Well, because that's our common law tradition, that militia officers are to be appointed by local authority. Not to be forgotten, the president of the Confederacy, his name was Jefferson Davis, the high-ranking general of the Army of the United States, offered him an appointment as commander of the militia of his state. I believe it was Mississippi. He was a graduate of West Point Military Academy, Jefferson Davis was. He was qualified for the position. And the general of the United States Army wanted him to accept the appointment, but he wouldn't do it. Why wouldn't he do it? Well, he told the general, he said, the Constitution of the United States does not allow you to appoint me as an officer of the militia of my state. That is reserved to the states. Well, see, that's another safeguard. The president has power to call out the militia. Well, another safeguard is that the officers that are appointed locally realize that the president has violated his oath and is calling out the militia for personal reasons. Well, then they have the duty, not just the right. It's more a right is a duty, more than we understand it now. They have the duty to decide whether or not the order is lawful or unlawful. If it's unlawful, they shouldn't do it. Do you remember? Do you remember that this fellow that sat in the White House, he had a Islamic name. I still don't believe that he got elected. That's too far-fetched. Obama Osama Obama or something like that. Islamic man. And there were men when the order went out to the National Guards and the Reserves to go over to Sand Land in the Far East, there were some that said, I'll go if somebody can prove to me that he's qualified to be president of the United States, because if he's not qualified to be president under the terms of the United States Constitution, he has no authority to order me anywhere. I remember one fellow. He was an officer. I believe he was an Army officer. He filed suit. And the suit went pretty far, but then finally they said, no, we're going to court-martial you, and they did. Well, what was he doing, and why did he do it? Well, he did it because in America, being a common law country, our oath, the oath that we require of military men from the lowest seaman deuce and jack private, clear up to the general officer of the United States Army and the admiral of the fleet, every one of them take the same oath. And the oath says this, that they will obey the orders of the officers that the president of the United States has appointed over them. But this is added to the oath, that they will obey not just orders, but lawful orders. Key word, lawful. And in a common law country, every person, not just the ones that have taken the oath doesn't add any duty to any American. Taking that oath to support the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that doesn't add any duty at all if you're an American. All it does is amplifies the duty to your mind. That's why you take an oath. An oath is designed to amplify, to bring to the forefront, to awaken the conscience, as the courts have said, to the duty you're swearing to. But every American has that duty to support and defend the Constitution. Well, these military men, though, they take an oath to obey lawful orders. I found out when I was on the other side of the world that Frenchmen, I remember specifically, but there were others. There were Australians, the Aussies, and there were British sailors and soldiers. Their oath was different than ours. Now, the Brits and the Aussies were from common law countries. They had a different sense about things. But the French, no, their oath was to the powers that be, to men. It was an oath to men or women. If there was an empress, places like Thailand and Burma and all those kinds of places. And in America, we don't do that. And the reason we don't do that, it's even more pronounced in America than in the other English-speaking countries, is because we're a common law country. And the oath of the militiaman is the same, and that's a safeguard. The safeguard is the oath is to not a person, but to law. Well, whose law? We say we're a government of laws and not men. That's nice. Doesn't mean anything, though, unless you define what law? Whose law? Law is always somebody's will. It's what somebody wants and says they want to happen. That's what law is. The question, the important question is, whose will is it? Well, it's the legislature's will. Well, do you really think that it's smart to devote yourself to obeying orders of a legislature? You know some of these legislators. We're watching them in action. Exceedingly dangerous bunch of people. I don't mean a little bit. I mean Jezebelian. That's what we got. That's what we got running. The legislature, the national legislature in America. Jezebel. You don't know who Jezebel is. You can read about her in the Bible. Dangerous, dangerous woman. Not for good reasons either. It's all right to be dangerous if you're a woman. Probably a good idea. But a fellow or a gal wants to be dangerous for the right reasons. There are four militia clauses. The first one says this. Well, I'd said the militia clauses address the duties of four classes of persons: congressmen, presidents of the United States, state officers and government, and lastly, the militiaman himself, four classes of persons. Here's the first militia clause. It says this: the Congress shall have power to provide for calling forth the militia. See, it doesn't say Congress has the power to call forth the militia. Let's read this closely. It says Congress has the power to provide for the calling forth. That's the thing I was talking about a while ago. Congress has the power to establish the rules that the president is to use to measure against the standard that the militia clauses give. Okay, that's Congress, to provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute. And here's the reasons the militia, the president or the governors make, well, the governors have a different set of standards, but the president's standards right here, the reasons he can call out the militia, here they are. Number one, to execute the laws of the Union. Number two, to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. One, two, three. And then Congress has the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. So Congress has the power to write and publish a pamphlet of military drill. I'm putting it in very simple terms. You know, when our country started, we didn't have an army, and we had a lot of militia, the separate colonies. Then we formed states, and those became the militia of the several states in each different state. Then George Washington was appointed to be the commander-in-chief, His Excellency, as they called him back then, of the armed forces of the United States, the Army. The Continental Army was formed, and George Washington said, I want them to take an oath to the United States, not just to their own colony, because we're a Continental Army and we're fighting a war together, and those things were done. And then he discovered, though, that he didn't have a law to govern the military forces of the United States. So what did he do? Well, he was very familiar, having been a member, an officer, of the British Armed Forces. And so he took their code of military justice and made it the code of the United States. Of course, he removed all references to King George III and the crown, but it was the same code, common law country. That's what we were used to. That's what he knew. He thought it was a good code, and that's what he took on. And he used it. And that's why we need to have some kind of a law for the military. Congress has the power to set that for the militia. He also didn't have a manual of drill and discipline for the army. And a fellow by the name of Pulaski, he was a Polak. His name was General Pulaski. He was a patriot, and he supported the American cause, and he became close friends with George Washington. Back in the Midwest, there's a county named after General Pulaski. It's the county wherein lies Cairo, Illinois, Pulaski County, named after this man who did so much to help us in our cause of independence from Britain. But he's the one that provided the manual of drill. He was the Polish people and the German people, that they're all mixed up over there. And he was a Prussian, really what he was, and same thing as being Polish. But he had to have a pamphlet of discipline. And you can look that up on the internet. Got the whole thing there, the pictures that are used to train the soldiers and the officers. Well, that's what Congress has the power to do, so there will be, as it says, an organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. But it needs to be uniform in every state so that if the militia is called together, they all have the same understanding of military commands, for example. So Congress has that power. Now, the second militia clause says this: reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers. Let's see, there it is. The states appoint the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. There's that discipline book that would be akin to what Pulaski drew up for the Continental Army. But that way it's uniform. You know, if you don't have uniform orders in a military unit, that's what a militia is called to come together to form. If you don't have that and a common understanding of those orders, then there's no unity. You know, Alfred the Great conquered a lot of the world. He was very ambitious, very young, died at age 33, I believe, drank himself to death in a drinking contest. Dumb thing to do. He was found face down on the Euphrates River, dead. But he was smart. Don't take that away from him. Most of us are, though, to varying degrees. We just do a lot of stupid things. But he did some stupid things, got himself killed. But he formed this army that was formed out of people that could not speak the same tongue. And so he couldn't provide orders to them. Commands, about face, forward march, all those simple things, they couldn't understand it. They all spoke a different tongue. So what he did was he devised a common set of commands that were vocal. And I don't know what they were, but they were noises made by the voice, and every officer had to learn them, and every soldier in his army had to learn them. And by providing that, he was able to control through those signals, those verbal signals, that they all understood, even though they spoke different languages. He was able to get them to move as a unit and to fight as a unit in concert. The third militia clause says the president, this is about the presidents of the United States, this third one, shall be commander-in-chief of the militia of the several states when, only when, called into the actual service of the United States. What if the governor calls them into the service of the state of New Hampshire? Well, the president has no command or authority over them in such a case. By the way, that concurrent jurisdiction, this bears repeating, I've said it before, but concurrent means that both presidents of the United States and governors of the several states in their states, each of them could call forth the militia, have authority to do so, if done so for the reasons and according to the rule of law Congress provides to the president. Governors of the states can call forth the militia according to their constitution standards, whatever that particular state has devised and set forth in law. But concurrent means this, ultimately, whoever calls forth the militia first or a militiaman or a militia unit from a specific area, whether it be the president or a governor, that's the one that has jurisdiction, and the other one can't get it till he gives it up. That's the law of the militia in America. So, first militia clause, Congress, second militia clause, the states, third militia clause, that means state governments, the officers of state government, third militia clause, presidents of the United States, then we get to the fourth militia clause. And notice, with each one of those three clauses, they all delegate authority. All authority among men is delegated. We could say also all authority, therefore, that a man could possibly have is derived from somebody else. All authority. I have authority. I have authority in my house and my home and my vehicle. Why? Because it's mine. I have authority over my toothbrush. It's mine. I have authority over my tongue to speak or not to speak because it's mine. Why is it mine? Because God gave it to me, and with giving it to me, he gave to me authority. John, Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 12. To as many as received him, to them gave he authority. That's jurisdiction. That's right. That's the duty to exercise discernment in individual decision. That's what right is. Another way to put it is a duty. Duty only arises from law. When God delegates duty to a man, as many as received him, to them, he delegates a right, which is duty. How does he do it? He does it through the revelation of his will. His will? Yeah. The will of the sovereign. Then the will of the sovereign is always law. See, law is always somebody's will. It depends on whose. And there's only one true lawgiver, says James the Apostle. And that one true lawgiver is the maker of heaven and earth and all that in them is, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the way the Old Testament often identifies him to that God, that sovereign God. Well, failure to hold these reins, the reins of any of these four jurisdictions I've just mentioned, to fulfill the Constitution's charge directed to them respecting the separate states' militia, never relies any of the other three from our Constitution's, relieves any other of the other three from our Constitution's charge to them. All authority is derived. The first three militia clauses derive authority from the people of the United States, who then give it to the states, who then form the Constitution of the United States, and then delegate authority to congressmen, state officials, and the presidents of the United States, respecting their dealing with the militia. But that fourth militia clause says this: a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. That clause, the Second Amendment, doesn't delegate any duty at all, like the other three. Why not? Because the duty of protection of self and family and friends and neighbors and country is a God-given duty. It's given to the individual straight from God. No government in between, no institution, no church, no priesthood, no preacher, no law professor, no university, no high court, nothing. It's given direct to the individual. God gave you the ability to protect yourself to whatever degree he gave it. And if you do not protect yourself, you're spitting in God's face. You're saying, I despise what you've given me, my life, my liberty, and my property, and I'm not going to protect it. There are a lot of people who believe that. There are Christian religious groups in our own history that take that position. It's called pacifism most often. It's silliness. It's stupidness. It's contrary to the Bible. Listen, when jurisdiction is delegated, whether from God direct to the individual or from one man to another, as our Constitution is the instrument used to delegate authority to officials in government here, if they don't protect their jurisdiction, that's what you're giving them when you give them a duty, if they don't protect that, then they hate the giver, who is the people of the United States, and they hate the duty itself. It's to despise the gift, what is given, and the giver. And when God has given us directly duties, as he has, and we call them fundamental rights. That's what a fundamental right is, one that's given direct from God, no mediator in between. There is no mediator between God and man, says the Bible, except the man, Christ Jesus, who happens to be God reduced to the span of a man. So really, in that sense, there is no mediator. In that sense, we have that direct connection to our God in the form, in the span of a man, the Messiah himself. But in that case, the point I'm driving at is there is nobody between us, no saints, no mediators between us and Jesus Christ. There is one mediator between God and man. That is the man Christ Jesus, says the writer to the Hebrews. And we need to look at the Second Amendment that way. And if we don't have that foundation of saying, well, we know that everything we have is derived, it could be derived from other men. If I were a congressman, I would have authority delegated to me through the Constitution of the United States from the people of the United States. Who are the people of the United States? The militia. How do I know? Because that's what our first fathers wrote about a lot. They said it over and over. The people are the militia are the people. We, the people of the United States. Lest we forget, should we water that down? Should we say, no, that's not what that means? No, see, the meaning has changed. Either we're originalists or we aren't. Is there something good to get start? Go back where I started, and then we'll quit. Is there something good about God's demand on men to be protectors, not only of themselves, but of their wives, their daughters, and their children? Is there something wrong with the female of the species receiving delegation from God to be the home guard and to protect the home with whatever it takes? That's her duty. That's what that word means in the New Testament. Home guard. We each have a job to do that's been delegated to us. Not that we can't help other people do their duty. This gal, bless her heart, I'm glad she wrote me. She said, I have a duty and I'm supposed to help do this and that. Well, of course, especially if your mother tells you to do, you do it, you better do it. And that she says her mother told her. I still call my mother and ask her what I ought to do sometimes. I'm just glad I still have one. But let's not be misunderstood. Women are often and a part of the militia movement, but that doesn't mean they're members of the militia. They aren't. It doesn't mean that they can't carry a gun. It doesn't mean a lot of things. And what it doesn't mean is it's important to ask the question what it does mean. But it is affirmative duty to men. It is punishable by our law if we do not call the answer or answer the call, the summons to muster in the militia. Well, back to Gerard, I suppose, if he's there. I hope you're there, Gerard. Thank you very much.
He's back in there somewhere. I know he is.
I had to pick up my phone and say, well, have I been talking to myself all this time? All this trouble I've been having?
Yeah.
He's looking for his button. If he doesn't come
He's looking for the button. He gets pulled away.
Yeah, I got it. I was muted. Okay. Well, that was good. That was very informative. So, if just keep your mic open in case a question comes up for you, Brent and Ken. We got it's 20 after 11, and we got probably 6 or 7 people in the question. So I'm going to go ahead and open up. It looks like JoJo Baby is what it looks like. I don't know where you're from. Where are you from, JoJo Baby? You're open. Hello, JoJo. Don't make me say baby again. It says JoJo Baby. I don't know.
Come on.
Hello? You there? I think I hear something in the distance.
I think that might have been me.
I don't know. It's
maybe.
Yes, but it's real quiet, JoJo.
I've been trying just to ask a question, and I'm...
Well, you're good now. I can hear you.
Okay, can I ask?
Go ahead. Fire away.
Okay. So, I got to kill this sound real quick because I'm getting class.
I lost you now.
She probably hit the X instead of the microphone and she was new at this.
Yeah, I don't hear anything.
You want to take the next one, and then I'll watch the queue, and if she gets back
she disappeared, so she's gone. So it'll be Kim from California now.
Hi guys, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Hey, I have a question. It's about the militia. In order to participate in the militia, do you have to get a license to carry a firearm, or as you're participating in the, you know, like the training and all that with the militia?
Absolutely.
Are covered under the Second Amendment to carry your weapon?
Look, you should never need a license to carry a firearm in the first place. All these licenses are, as far as I'm concerned, are unconstitutional. All of them.
Right.
Bar none. So, you don't need a license. And, you know, most of the time, they require you to have a long rifle, like a military weapon.
Okay.
But, you know, and licensing started out with pistols, not for nothing. you know, the concealed carry baloney thing, you know. But any rate, no, you don't need a license. They don't license you. It's just assumed that you have a right to bear arms.
Perfect.
and you take your arm with you when you serve in the militia.
Okay.
And it should be a military grade weapon, like a high powered rifle, you know what I mean? Or
like
even
AR-15, is that acceptable or is that not correct?
What? An AR what?
AR-15, like a 223 or
No, that's a military grade weapon. That's considered military grade.
Okay.
But there's lots of weapons that are military grade. I mean, today we have automatics and semi-automatics and things like that. You know, years ago, I mean, they were bolt action. The British 303 was an infield that they used tons and tons of those, you know.
Right.
And that was still considered a military grade weapon, you know.
Yep. I used to have a 7mm, so.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what I wanted to know, because I was thinking if you have it, if you don't. Normally, you know, most people here, this is California, so there's so many bunch of stupid rules, but to carry a weapon, you know, when you go hunting, you have to show them your license. So I was wondering if you had also had to have something like that if you're going with, like, your house to where you're training, you know, and you get to where you're going to be and you're starting to train. So I wouldn't be sure. I think the only person who could say anything to you at that point, because if you're an actual verified militia, would be, like, a sheriff, right?
Well, even the sheriff wouldn't be able to tell you whether or not you could carry a gun. That's your God-given right. So you don't need the permission of the sheriff. So,
perfect.
You know, and people are thinking of using this as an excuse over the gun laws that they cannot tell you that you can't carry a weapon because you are in the militia. You are, you know, bona fide. And, you know, and like Brent says, you're born into the militia, so at some point, you're supposed to have a gun, and you're supposed to train with it. So if they're telling you need a license, you don't need a license to be in the militia. In order to be in the militia, you have to have a gun. You have a right to carry a gun, and you're expected to.
As Brent was saying, the men are born into the militia, and the women are the home guard. So even as the home guard, you have that right. Every person has that right.
Absolutely. It's not a right just for men. The Second Amendment is there's a couple parts to it, but, you know, all men have the right to defend themselves, including, that includes women as part of mankind.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Okay.
And thank you very much.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, going to do Tamara from Florida, moving right along. Good evening. Got a question, Tamara?
Hi, yeah. I was learning this week about the Supremacy Clause, which states in the International Covenants and Constitution that America is the law of the land. They are a common law country, and that it's, with one exception, that it not be self-evident. So unless we assert our common law rights, we basically have only privileges. When I found that out, it led me to understanding what Shuttlesworth says versus the state of Birmingham, Alabama, where it states that the state cannot convert a right or a benefit or a privilege, pardon me, a right, which is a liberty. The state cannot convert a liberty into a privilege and then license and fee it. The citizen has the right to refuse to abide by that with impunity. And then after I found that, I went, because I've been in some trouble, so I went to the federal law to look at what would happen if a federal law was broken through the color of law. So I found in Title 18, subsection 242, that it says whoever, under any color of law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully, let me see, I'm saying it by memory, but I want to stop right there. So
you were doing pretty good if that was from memory, but go ahead.
It was. If they willfully, let's see here.
You're a little low. Try to get close to your mic. I'm kind of straining to hear you.
Okay. If they willfully subject any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities that are secured or protected by the Constitution or the laws of the United States, then they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned, not more than 1 year or both. And if bodily injury results from the act committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosives, or fire, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. And if death results from the act committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years, or for life, or both, or may be sentenced to death. Now, this came to me because of my situation where I've had sheriffs actually assault me. And it's my understanding that once I moved the case to federal court, basically they've committed acts against me that are mentioned in this Title 18, and one of the police officers actually was choking me with my purse for over a minute, right about between 1 minute and 10 seconds. And so an attempt to kill me, which means he could be in prison for life, a term of years, or both, or death may be sentenced to him.
Well, we got a lot of people that are in trouble in the United States, according to Title 18, because they do it every day. You know, much of what's done under law and statute is a violation of our unalienable rights. You know, I mean, even driver's licenses. You know, look, we have a right to travel, and through trickery and word magicry, we have these driver's licenses that are really, you know, for driving commercially. The government doesn't have a right to tell you where you can drive or how you can drive or how it should be done. That's our right to travel. And, you know, and there's discussions about the normal mode of transportation, which used to be the horse and wagon, but today it's the automobile. So, yeah, they violate them all the time, you know, trying to resurrect them and bring them in the court, and make no mistake about it, it is the federal court where you have to defend, is the place to fight that, because it's a violation of the law of the land, the Constitution, and so that's who has jurisdiction over that, is, you know, in the federal court is the one that should be taking those bad actors, those sheriffs, whoever it might be, those under color of law, and correcting them. You know, and the thing is will they? That's the thing.
Right.
And
right.
I think it's good to bring a suit, because I think the more suits they get, the more pressure they have to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw this on Google, which I don't usually watch the news or anything, but I had seen this today where it said and I don't know that this is a good idea, they said that the new governor that's coming into office, her last name is Kat in New York, and she plans on within 30 days of taking over office, 90 days, she plans on wiping out everyone in office except for one person, she said.
Really? In New York?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought Cuomo was King Cuomo. I thought he was crowned king forever. But
I'm pretty sure it said the New York Times.
Well, yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Look at Cuomo. What's Cuomo? Two terms now? Yeah, he really can't run again, right?
Yeah, at least two terms.
Yeah, no, I think he's done. Unless we become the, you know, Socialist Republic of New York, which we already are. So I don't know. You look at, do we have to have a vote for the new governor? How does she know? Is he going to appoint her? I mean, how does she know she's going to become a governor? This is a promise she's making, running for governor.
Oh, got you, while she's running for governor. Because I was thinking, you know, is this a really good idea to just completely take everyone out? Or do we try to find those who've least violated their oaths and try to work with them? I mean...
Well, you're going to create... If you take everyone out, you look at it, I don't know. Is it... I don't know if it's almost, you know, for me, you know, what's worse, communism or anarchy? At least in anarchy, you're fighting. You got a gun. You know, I don't know. You know, you have a fighting chance under anarchy. Under communism, you have nothing. You're the state is the god. So that, to me, that's a worse situation than our anarchy. So not that anarchy's good, but at least under, you know, during that fighting, you have a chance to reinstitute the rule of law if you're lucky. You don't end up with a dictatorship. So I don't know. You know, look at this is, you know, this is speculation. And, you know, we talk about, you know, reinstating all the committee men using a few people. It's a good thing if you have a plan and you have people that are educated enough to step into the vacuum that you create. So if you're going to create a vacuum by doing something like that, you certainly better have a plan because, you know, that's one of the methods that the communists use when they create civil unrest and stuff, and they create such a untenable, horrible situation that the people beg for that government to come back in to control, to at least put some control in, because there's killing in the streets under anarchy. You know, everybody's killing everybody. And then at least under a dictatorship, at least there's some order, you know, and people will beg to be ruled under that order. After they suffer enough from lawlessness, they'll even take unjust law over no law. So that's the danger to that. But anyway, I think we beat that subject to death. Okay. So yeah. If that's it, I'll move on to Greg.
There's some instructions on how to become a committeeman, and I'm appreciating that because I would like to follow through with doing that. I think that's something that everyone needs to experience.
Yeah, make sure you watch the video that where Lenny tells you, Lenny Roberto lays out the proper form and the way, and, like John was saying, there's a lot of pitfalls there. And you want to be sure you're calling yourself committee man and not member of the county committee and all that other baloney.
Okay. And just like that, you know, there's also some sort of direction with regards to how to educate the sheriffs in our community. Where would I go to find that so that I can start working on educating the sheriffs in the community that I'm staying in?
Well, we have pages for the sheriff. We sent them out. We have a booklet, the power of the county sheriff. Actually, we have I believe it's a web page for the sheriffs. So that's on our. I don't know specifically how you get there. I can't tell you. Which.
You can go under the welcome tab there and come down to the county sheriff. We're going to move that over to the people's duty in the next few days or a week. But right now, go to welcome. Come down, you'll see county sheriff, click on that, and then you'll see there is a download. You can copy the sheriff's handbook there, and there's a lot of information here. So hopefully that will help you. But one of the plans is for the militia to make contact with the sheriff once they, organize.
Right, okay, so that's probably a better idea than I'm not being alone.
Yeah, that way, yeah, it's always better in a group, no doubt.
Yeah, I agree. All right, thank you, guys.
You're welcome. And one of the good things about the sheriff is he's a political animal, and he depends on his constituents. So, and everybody shies away from politics, and they cringe, but, the sheriff is elected by the people, so he has to serve his constituents. And that's the power that he has, that the people put him in, and therefore he's the top cop for that reason. So anyway, we're going to go ahead, and I'm going to open Greg up because it's getting late, and we want to try to get everybody. So Greg, it looks like Michigan, MI. You've been.
Yeah, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good, good.
Good. Listen, a few things I wanted to comment on, a couple I think will be pretty quick, though. Well, first is a question. I got an email today from someone I'm wondering if anyone there at your end knows. And they're it says they're from New York. A Dr. Richard Cordero with a judicialdisciplinereform.org. Does that ring a bell with anyone at your end?
Not with me. I don't know with anybody else that doesn't. And he's claiming that's through us, or we endorse that?
No, not at all. No, I thought you may know of his organization, and I will tell you why. Because this email, and it's very lengthy, I forwarded the email to Jan earlier today to see if he had any comments about it. And I understand from listening to you guys today, perhaps he's out of town and he can't, you know, you won't talk to him about this for a while if you do. But anyway, the gist of this email, again, which is very in-depth, it says, seeking inside information from judges and clerks who can become the counterparts to whistleblower and lead to the impeachment of the federal judiciary as a racketeering branch in need of transformative reform. That's kind of the title of this thing. Mm. And I think he is looking for people who can, I don't know, forward info to him about judges and court staff, whatever, that we think might participate in whistleblowing about wrongdoings in the court, although he does say to lead to the impeachment of the federal judiciary. But this thing is very lengthy. There's a lot of links to open. There's a lot of details. This thing is a few pages long. And I don't know why I got this thing, because I've never heard of or heard from this judicial discipline reform out of New York before today. And I was wondering if me being a member of the NLA was, you know, how I somehow got on this organization's mailing list.
I don't know. We don't give our members emails to anybody, but
well, I'm not really too worried about that, but I can't help but be curious. And again, I forwarded it.
I'll ask Jan to send me a copy of that so we can look that over. And I don't really know, you know, why he's targeting the federal judiciary. And look, they all have problems right now, from the lowest to the highest.
I'm well aware.
I think that Trump is getting rid of a lot of them. He's been putting in lots of judges, and hopefully they all know how to rule under the rule of law. So it seems to me that the federal judiciary is being taken care of before the local. I think we have more corruption in the local because they're used to running fast and furious, you know, doing their own thing, and nobody's watching them.
Well, so, here in Michigan, nobody will do anything about them, which I've experienced firsthand, the so-called Judicial Tenure Commission and the so-called Attorney Grievance Commission, basically just rubber stamps whatever they do. And I and other people I know have written a few complaints about different judges and prosecutors, et cetera, to both entities here out of Metro Detroit, out of downtown Detroit, I should say, that are supposed to oversee courts here around Michigan. And we all get the same reply that, oh, we've looked into it. We don't find a problem. We find nothing to investigate. There'll be no further action taken, but thanks for bringing it to our attention. And I don't know anyone of the few people I know that have lodged complaints with either entity that has gotten any different type of answer ever. And I know several people that have complained. I thought you guys might have some familiarity with this organization. I understand you don't. I wanted to say, too, I appreciate John Darish's remarks earlier, because I haven't heard anybody else aside from him this evening, say something that I've been concerned and just really pretty irate about for about 3 weeks now, because I've commented to some other people about this. I don't hear anybody else aside from John today sharing any frustration over it, but I have been really ticked off for a few weeks now listening to the news and hearing one member of Congress after another get up in front of the cameras and rant and rave about their big, as far as I can tell, relatively newfound duty to uphold the Constitution that they took this oath over because of the impeachment scandal here. Because of this big impeachment charade, now they're all lining up, at least the Democrats are, and perhaps some of the Republicans too, I'm not sure, ranting about how it's their duty to uphold the Constitution, and that's why they're pursuing, you know, the impeachment, because they're duty-bound. And here I've been drugged to one court hearing about every 6 weeks in this corrupt little town I live in outside of Detroit for about 12 or 13 months, an average of every 6 weeks, they've drugged me into this local court in Redford Township with basically trumped up ordinance violation charges about my property, where I've been for 22 years and never had a problem previously until I spoke out against some policies of some of the local township leaders, including proposed pay raises and things like that at some public meetings in recent years on a few occasions. And I spoke pretty effectively, and a lot of people agreed with me, and most of the issues were things that were of concern to other people in the township too, and you know, I was not the only one to speak about a few of them anyway. And after a few times of that, and especially when I spoke out against pay raises, including a 40% pay raise proposed for the DPW head, the ordinance department head, that was overturned, then his department started hitting me with these property ordinance citations over and over, and I've been drug in and out of court. I've paid thousands of dollars. I've been threatened with contempt of court for trying to speak on behalf of my own defense in full sentences, usually in an empty courtroom, that because they would hold my hearing for last for the day, time after time, so there were no witnesses from the public left in the room to see how they were dealing with me. And a lot of my arguments were based on constitutional provisions and constitutional case law, and they ignored all of them one after another. These people here who are supposed to uphold my rights according to the Constitution, and they wanted nothing to do with it. So anyway, John, I share your frustration, you know, regarding listening to these people in Washington now in Congress rant and rave about their great duty to the Constitution being responsible for the focus of their efforts, you know, recently regarding the impeachment. It's very frustrating to me. I wanted to ask if any of you can tell me anything about ways to hold or try to hold an attorney responsible, or now liable, I should say, for having observed a few different occasions of at least one of two judges that I was up against, the first judge that kept having me drug into her court on behalf of the ordinance officer and the township supervisor. He noted a few different instances of the judge that whose cases he was in on, which was the second judge involved. The first one reamed me and chewed me out on a few different occasions in her empty courtroom, and then she went and retired this past summer. So a different judge there took over, and that judge violated the law, according to my attorney, on a few different occasions. He plain flat out stated to me, she's breaking the law. It's against the law. What this judge is doing is against the law. This happened three or four times, and he would do nothing in pursuit of it. Aren't these attorneys obligated in some way to do something regarding filing grievances, filing charges, something against the judges when they flat out see that they're violating the law and how they're handling a person's case and how they're working and pressing charges against them?
I don't know that they're bound. Don't forget the lawyer is an officer of the court, and the judge controls. They control.
Yeah, I learned about that too.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
What an iron fist. It's almost easier for you to make a complaint against the judge and
well, I've
file
done
it.
That. It's
and,
been to no end, as I've said. I'm willing to continue to.
Yeah, it does. You should do it anyway, and you should encourage other people to do it. Look, your only route there is civic action. If she's doing this to you, she's probably doing it to other people, and the best thing to
undoubtedly.
Is to team up with those other people. And, you know, try to get a court watcher thing. We have court watchers, you know, that system in NLA where people in your area will go to court with you. And even if they're not in NLA.
Yeah, I've had some people go. One time, the first person I had go with me was chased out of the court by the first judge, and she was really ticked off when she found out.
No, they can't be chasing people out of the court.
Well, she did, and it was an empty court aside from me and my friend. And once my friend was booted out, it was just me.
Well, then you got to bring 10 people. You know,
on one occasion I had probably 6 to 8 people, at least 6 or 7. A few of them also wrote letters to the Judicial Tenure Commission, you know, in complaint. Mm-hmm. And we were all told, sorry, but we don't see a problem here. But I have tried these things.
Well,
you know,
the more you listen, even though you don't see anything, the more that you write to them, it does make a difference because they're covering for that judge, and at some point they're going to put themselves on the line for not investigating these things. And, you know, so it even though you're not getting results from your complaints, it lodges them and it records them. They have to have a record of that. And so that's kind of what we're doing in the court, too. We're establishing that record in hopes that, you know, when we get the court opened up the way it should be, that those things will be remedied. And that's basically what you can do. I mean, look at everybody has different resources. You know, you can sue the judge. You know, I mean, you can take charges out and sue them, and that would cause her to have to recuse herself from your case. We've had people do that. They hate that. So, you know, but you know, then you're going tit for tat. Who's got more time, energy, and money? You know. And
right.
Of course, you got the dirty end of the stick. You know that. But look, if they get out of control and they get enough people ticked off and you start a coalition, you may be able to clean them out, you know.
Well, you know, that's something that I've certainly been considering. But I've lived in this town for 22 years, and there's a lot of frightened people here.
Yeah, well,
because
they keep
this
them
town
like
has
that.
A notorious reputation for, you know, the officials beating up on people, having people drug into court, sometimes put in jail. And the problem is in Lansing, Michigan, they've long had a reputation of doing nothing about it, unfortunately.
Right,
one governor after another and one attorney general after another. I have a friend who recently was drugged through elder probate court in a case regarding her father-in-law, who's been dead for a couple years now, and her husband and brothers are still trying to get their assets turned over to them out of probate, and the attorneys are still milking the assets, which is mainly real estate and legal fees. And the guy who owned them, the father, has been dead for 2 years, and they've still got his assets and won't release them.
Well,
but anyway,
that's an epidemic in the whole country. The probate is one of the worst courts. Other
than
family court and probate are the ugliest, you know, practices out there, and that's what they're doing. They're stealing and raping the people they are.
Well,
and,
they are.
And hopefully there'll be an end to that, you know. And I'm really hoping that, you know, some of this federal stuff that Trump is doing will filter down to these lower judges, you know, and where we can actually
get
grand juries.
Well, we need that desperately. I suspect that in many cases the lower the level, the less oversight that those lower level judges are worried about. That's certainly been the case here with this little township court I've dealt with here in Metro Detroit.
Yeah. And they're running fast and furious with themselves, but it's going to get down to them. And really, I think the best way is when the grand jury will indict them. And we know that we have a right to make a grand jury. So that's, in my mind, that's the remedy right there. The people, you know, they, like Brent says, the only cure for lawlessness is the law. Well, how do you bring the law back in? Well, the people instituting their juries, their grand juries, is the way it's done. So, you know.
You don't think there's any legal grounds that I can hold this attorney I paid many thousands of dollars to going after this judge that violated the law in front of him?
Let me tell you something. When you go into court without a lawyer, the judge actually has an obligation that the attorneys don't abuse you. That's why they don't like you to go to court without a lawyer, because it puts a certain obligation on them, on the judge themselves. You know, and a lawyer as an officer of the court, he has the same type of thing, but who's going to enforce it? You know, don't forget, the judge was an attorney, and the attorney might, you know, they all got designs on being judges, a lot of them, and they're a team, you know, they're a good
old
boy. All right,
that's a problem with this attorney I had. He admitted to a friend that he also worked for, and he basically screwed her over, too. She's the one who had the probate case I was talking about. He met her sitting next to me in the aisle of the court I was in and shoved about 3 or 4 of his business cards in her hand, and then later he's representing her. But, right. You know, he told her, he never admitted it to me, but he did admit to her that he hoped to become a judge someday.
Right.
And in both cases, he didn't want to challenge this judge I had too much, and he didn't want to challenge the judge that she had too much in her probate case. Right. And it was very obvious that he was, you know, siding with these judges against us and our wishes while we were the ones paying him.
Look, there's not too many attorneys that are going to challenge a judge, unless you're a notorious attorney that has you know, respect and means, you know, unless you're a William Kunstler or somebody like that. And, you know, the judges and the attorneys, they're a good old boys team, and that's just the way it is. But I want to get going now.
This guy seemed a lot more worried about them than he was about what me or my friend is going to do.
Absolutely, because he doesn't understand. Look, the only thing you can do is like I said, is civic action with a bunch of people. And look, people need to run for office locally. You know, you want to clean these things out. Let's put some good people up. But look, I want to get moving forward because it's getting late.
All right. Well, ask Jan about that email I sent, all right?
I will.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay. Next victim, I'm going to open up Jojo.
Yeah.
There you go. I missed you.
Are they on you this time?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. We lost you last time, so.
Yeah, there's a terrible echo because I had to move from my computer to the phone.
Oh.
I'm going to make this really quick, but I'm going to try to go away from my phone a little bit far. The computer's been.
I kind of lost you. Are you there?
Hello again? Hello?
There you go. Now you got way far away. I couldn't hear you.
I had to stay close enough to my computer, and I'm hearing everything 3 times over. So I'm going to make
this quick. Say your question, and then maybe you can mute yourself.
I have a felony, so I'm not allowed to be a juror in their eyes. Is that going to hinder the stuff that I want to do to move forward, to possibly be a committee man and move on to the jury stuff? Is that going to be against me?
Well,
absolutely not. You paid for your crime if you committed the crime. Who knows if you really committed a crime? I mean,
it's a victimless crime.
Yeah, so therefore
it was a victimless crime. And
well, without a victim, there is no
part,
crime.
Right.
Yeah. See, I tried to stand up for myself, and I got the same thing, and those judges buried me. They broke me. And so I just lay down for it, and now I'm free, and I'm never giving them another pound of flesh. But I don't think they should be able to get away with every day. I thought there was justice, and there's not.
No, there's just us. There's no justice, just us.
Yeah, and if you're alone, like I didn't have friends that rallied around me. I had one, but then they threw him out of court too, and fined him because he wrote asshole on the bench, because that's what the judge was being. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But they threw him out, and they just squashed me. So I laid down. And I laid down for 3 years, and I know what they did was wrong, and I don't ever want to have to do it again.
Well, you know? Educate yourself and learn.
I thought I was pretty educated. I was pretty educated, but they'll beat you and mace you and tase you and whatever they need to.
Well, you got to understand that they're taking you to places that you don't even know, you know, what jurisdiction or... There's no constitution in play in their court. They'll even tell you there's no constitution in here. I don't want to hear that constitution, because they understand that, you know, they're trying to run their equity court over you. And as far as they're concerned, you know, you've consented to their control. That's where they feel confident in abusing you. They're taught that they have a contract with you. When you answer that subpoena, you know, there's a certain presumption that takes place, and if you don't rebut the presumption, then guess what? You're it.
Yeah, well, I went there to represent myself and rebut. They stole my van from me where I was living in it. I go right in there and I said, You don't have jurisdiction. Then he had me thrown in jail on FTA while I clearly sat there. I was set like 5 minutes late. So they stripped me out and beat my ass in a broom closet and threw me in jail. So I come out again, and I went into a seizure, and I kicked the first responder. And so they threw me in jail over that and kind of beat me up. And... they got me behind they got me in jail, and I have nothing.
Yeah, well, you know? I would do whatever I could to stay out of that, the roof of that place, you know.
Never again. Yeah. But they're forceful, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you have to know, you have to cross your T's and dot your I's.
Yes, you do.
I am going to let you go, though, because you were trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
But I'm not gashed for a tainted past.
No, absolutely not. No.
And I might not be able to be a Minuteman, and because it's a man's duty, but it would be my honor.
I'm sure that you, in a pinch, you should certainly do whatever needs to be done.
Were you talking about Minuteman or Committeeman?
Yeah, the militia.
The militia.
I call them the Minutemen, the militia. That's what I was thinking. I'm going to be a minute gal.
Yeah. Well, we could use some of them.
And I just got with Margie today, but I am all in to volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
I love the research. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Yeah. Well, it's like Brent says, it doesn't mean that you can't, you know, defend yourself or...
That's why I got in trouble, because I mind my own business, but they come at me. And so there's fisticuffs and biting and macing and tasing. Yeah.
Did you say you like to research?
I love to research.
Okay, get a hold of Jan and let them know.
Let me grab a pen.
Some things to be researched.
This is like the 21st century. Do you need my email?
You go to our site, and on our site, nationallibertyalliance.org, go to to the directory, highlight directory. I think it says directory. Let me double click on that.
Okay.
Yeah, it says directory. You can highlight directory or click on directory underneath it, and you'll find Jan's email address, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, or you can call him. His phone number's there. And get on to the list, and you could do some research and help us with going through getting the calendars for the election of the committeeman.
I tried to take as extensive notes as I could today, but I'm not sure that I know what a committeeman is, but it'll only take me a minute. I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I appreciate thank you very
that.
Much.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. If you want to, go to People's Duty. I like People's Duty. Click on Committee Man, and everything you ever wanted to know about a committee man but was afraid to ask, you'll find it right there.
Because I think I just joined up with you guys about 4 or 5 days ago. So,
yeah.
And I've been trying to poke around in there as much as I can.
Right. Well, actually, we don't have too much information on it yet, but we do have some information, and of course, the petition process.
Okay.
But we're going to have a lot more information on the committee man up here shortly.
Okay. All right. Well, I am at your disposal. It can be kind of handy periodically, so utilize my talents. I'm sorry, this is really hard. I'm hearing myself like 3 times. So, God bless you guys. Have a safe, happy New Year. And I just appreciate you being there.
Okay, thank you very much, and
appreciate
we appreciate your participation also.
Thank you.
Okay.
Terry, can you hear me? Is Terry still there? Real quick, is Terry there?
Yeah.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
You should call me or email me or something.
I'm writing down your email address, and I will contact you, okay?
Okay, cool beans.
I'll get all that off.
God bless.
Okay, thank you. God bless. And with that, it's 12:04. I think it's time
okay.
to close the meeting out.
Okay. With a prayer? With a prayer?
God bless us all. Yeah,
with
go ahead.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, my gosh. I could have made that so much easier. Appropriateness, and it's, do we want to put on the armor of God?
That's perfect.
Okay, so, and I don't remember the address, though. It's Ecclesiastes? No,
put
the armor
on,
of God. No. Ephesians.
That sounds like one of the letters. It might have been Ephesians, yeah.
I think it is Ephesians. Let me power choose God.
Ephesians.
It was
the armor of God.
There you go.
Here I go. Let me just grab my glasses real quick, though. I had my Bible out when you were reading earlier. Come before you, Father, for all your blessings. We'd like to say we're going to put on the armor of God. Finally, be strong in the Lord. And in his mighty power, put the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything to stand your ground, stand firm then. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything to stand firm then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, and pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep your prayer for all the Lord's people. Should we stop there?
Amen to that.
Amen.
We went through a lot of that tonight, didn't we? So that's a good prayer for all the troubles that we run into here. So thank you, everybody, for showing up, and we'll see you here next week again.
Thank you so much.
Same place. You're welcome.
May God bless you guys, and have a safe and wonderful new year with your family and friends.
Okay, you too. Likewise. God bless everybody.
Yes.
Want to get the recording? I don't see the button. I'll end the session here.
I have a hard time leaving, so you're going to have to throw me out.
Yeah, we'll get you. Don't worry about it.